Scrapper fans, we're over the halfway line now as we continue on our, let me tell you something, March Mania, the podcast series in which myself, you let me tell you something, co-host Lorcan Mullen, and the King Bookair to my Queen Charmel,
Mr. Simon Cross,
discuss a match from the wide-ranging history of the WrestleManias, one match for every four WrestleManias at least. As I said, we're past the halfway point now, but we are going to add another little extra feature to the historical context as I ask you, Simon, to tell us where we are, when we are, and what it is we'll be talking about today.
We are at Allstate Arena in Chicago. The event is WrestleMania 22. The match we're specifically covering is Edge versus Mick Foley in a hardcore match. This takes place April 2nd, 2006. Now, to put our listeners more into the picture of what culture was like back in those days, we're going to interject a little bit of history into these episodes now. So, the UK number one on April 2nd, 2006, was So Sick by Neo. For our cousins across the pond, the US number one at this time was Temperature by Sean Paul. Again, absolute all-timer. Lorcan is a film man and has many branches of film podcast. So it would be remiss of me not to talk about the box office at this time. The UK number one at the box office at this time was Denzel Washington's Inside Man. And in the US, bit of a gear change, it was Ice Age the Meltdown.
Well, will this cause a meltdown in our opinions, or will we be so sick of each other's voices by the end of it, we'll be calling this whole thing off? Well, that remains to be seen. But hopefully, the neutralizing factor, the lukewarm water of this conversation, perhaps, can come from our latest guest for this episode. He is a comedian, a podcaster in his own right, an all-around sound dude, and one half of the Birmingham hot comedy night that is the Kamikaze Club. It is none other than Adam Hawker. Adam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, yeah, how did that little introduction, did it whirl back the clock for you? Did you have any memories of 2006, both in wrestling and WrestleMania 22, and also in pop culture, as we alluded to with those number one singles and movies?
Absolutely. Can't say I was a huge Neo fan. Do you remember that being number one? That was during that period of sort of him and like Akon. A lot of let's do a song with a squeaky voice backing thing. I think that was more of an Akon thing. But you had that vibe, that era.
The Chipmunks.
Akon
sound
had
effect.
That market cornered, didn't he?
Yeah. I guess you're right, like that sort of crooner with a R&B crooner with a hip hop feel to him, I suppose. Or the other way around with Akon, but really we're kind of at area of, I wouldn't even call anywhere an area of expertise, but close to one that we might be passionate about in our opinions would be wrestling. Now, Adam, let's give the audience a bit of a context here. Would you have watched WrestleMania 22 either when it happened or soon after it had happened? Where were you as a wrestling fan in 2006? And maybe just give a little quick potted history of what got you into wrestling as well.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a millennial. So I came down as a small child with a very serious case of Hulkamania. I was, complete massive fan as a sort of 6-7-year-old. I was big into WCW as well. We're recording this obviously just after Sting retired. Sting was one of my big heroes growing up. And then I'd kind of fell out of love a little bit, came back a little bit through friends during the Attitude era. And then by the early 2000s, I'd been definitely kept up with passing of the torch from the Attitude era to the Ruthless Aggression era. And at this point, I was probably, if anything, I was keeping up with the WrestleManias, but probably watching more TNA, just because it was easier to access in the UK. It used to be that wrestling channel that had every 10 minutes or so a thing about AJ Styles or Samoa Joe, which is mad that they're still near the pinnacle of the profession. I also absolutely love Mick Foley. I'm not wearing a plaid shirt today, but I normally am. It's mostly because of...
Oh, a man after my own heart.
Well, this is a funny one, Simon, I guess, because in all the previous ones that we've covered so far, it's been pre your introduction to wrestling as like a regular part of your diet of consuming entertainment, I suppose. Like, our previous episode was WrestleMania 17. You've said your entry point for the WrestleManias was WrestleMania 18. And as well, like Adam, like, this was maybe the least interested I ever was in the week-to-week, day-to-day running of the WWE. Partly because I was living on a mattress in a bed sit in Erdington, scraping a living together at HMV. No internet connection in my bedroom. Did I have? I don't think I did. Yeah, I didn't. I was going to an internet kiosk in Birmingham City Centre occasionally. Do you remember that, Adam? In the Palisades. Not the Palisades.
Yeah, in the top
where
of
the Primark the is pavilions. Now. Pavilions. Yeah. That'd be where I'd spend my day off, going into there and looking up the wrestling results. But if it was wrestling that I was interested in at that point, it was Ring of Honor. This was at the height of my Ring of Honor love. And so what was going on in the WWE just didn't interest me at all. And also, I guess you can say, this was the start of maybe the conflict between the wrestling fans that stuck around and the WWE. We're into the John Cena era now, a year on from him winning the title at WrestleMania 21. And Edge's participation in this match really comes off the back of his being the first victim, perhaps, of the Cena wins LOL tragedy that was befalling so many smart fans online. And this was like a consolation prize of sorts to him. And like, I mean, they basically said in the promo building up, they were coming to steal the show because Mick Foley had never had a WrestleMania moment and Edge was just pissed off at the whole world and was going to take it out on Mick Foley because he can't.
Where he lost the title for the last time at that point. So he just misdirected his anger at Foley, basically.
Yeah, it's one of those builds that actually sort of makes sense, which is quite rare sometimes for a WrestleMania build where it's a legend against a newer guy. Quite often there's no like rhyme or reason to the build, but this one has an actual logical build.
So Simon, was this at a point where you would have been a weekly WWE watcher? Would you have been catching Raw and SmackDown and everything, or at least one of those shows and watching the pay-per-views? Essentially, you would have as much memories of this time of wrestling as I did in all the previous episodes we've been talking about. Or were you, like Adam, already sort of switching to the Wrestling Channel and TNA and other areas?
So at this point, I had only the access to WWE of my friend taping episodes for me. I think I started watching pay-per-views with him after this. I lost £10 on a bet on this WrestleMania with him because I was adamant that Triple H wouldn't fall to Cena the way that Edge did. So that cost me a tenner. Thank you very much for that. I'm still bitter.
So you were the second victim of Cena wins LOL after Edge.
Yes. You know, sod the Nexus. I'm... you know, the one that got hurt the most by this Cena wins LOL era. I think I read the results for this, and I think I did see it quickly afterwards. I either watched it live or within the next couple of days afterwards through videotape. It's one of the few times my mum commented on wrestling watching this pay-per-view, which I know we go to the card later on, but also had the Shawn Michaels Vince McMahon match, and just the look of disgust from my mother as towards the finish of this match was that particular match was a sight to behold. So I'm kind of grateful she didn't see the finish of the match we're about to talk about, because that would have been I think slightly harder to explain.
So what were both of your memories of this? What's been the time gap between you watching that match the first time back in 2006 and you watching it now in 2024? 18 years ago. Nick Wayne literally was born around this time.
It's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
I'd seen it maybe a few years ago. I think I'd watched it, possibly when Edge came back out of retirement. And I think the thing that struck me watching it again now as well is like that I think probably the reason this is generally recognized as sort of the best hardcore match in WWE is that there's actually some storytelling to it. There's not just the obvious couple of big spots.
Now that's really interesting because this is the first time I've watched it since around 2006. I might have like watched it once or twice at that point because I had the tape, so why not? I really loved the match at the time. I'd see Adam's point with the storytelling, especially, and I am going to do this a lot, comparing and contrasting it to the other. I think they officially called that one a no holds barred match between Shawn and Vince, just to avoid booking two of the exact same type of match. But yeah, that one tried to have a little bit of storytelling, but that was mainly silly spots. Whereas this, there's slight callbacks to Foley's previous work. There's meaningful interference rather than interference for the sake of interference. It's just a nice juxtaposition, but personally, I really don't want to give away the farm here, but it held up at its time. I'm debating whether or not it holds up now.
I think that the reason this was held up for such a long time is that for the longest time, this was really the last vestiges of proper, hardcore, all blood and guts wrestling that we got on national TV on this scale until AEW came along and allowed Jon Moxley to cut loose with whatever he felt like. And so for the better part of 15 years almost, this was the last and the final. And because with the hardcore matches, as you say, Adam, it had always been at least a one-upping on the violence scale. I would disagree on the... It depends on how you define a hardcore match, because this is also clearly the final of a trilogy of matches that Mick Foley had that I think are probably his three major calling cards as a wrestler of this period of time, other than the Hell in a Cell match with The Undertaker, where you got the 2000 Royal Rumble match against Triple H, you got the Backlash 2004 match with Randy Orton, and you got this WrestleMania 22 match with Edge. It seemed like they wanted to do a version of this again, sort of around WrestleMania 29 time, or be a bit before then, 27, 28 time, when Dean Ambrose was supposed to debut and feud with Mick Foley. I don't know if you guys remember this, where he accosted Mick Foley, and I think it was meant to lead to... I don't even know if it would have been a hardcore match or what. I don't know if they would just pass the PG era and were allowed to ease up on certain things, but they were still like... I can't think there's many matches after this that have blading and blood in them, like deliberate blood. I know that... I think the Chris Jericho Shawn Michaels feud had one match with, like... I think he was stopped due to blood loss or something along those lines. And would that have been 2007? Or was that even before this? It would have been after this match, yeah. So like a year and a half after this, like blood just goes off of WWE wrestling entirely. And yep. No matches in between them had gone to, as far as I can recall, had gone to the barbed wire and all that kind of stuff. There was also the DX rated RKO match about a year after this. And also when Edge and Mick Foley teamed up a couple of months later for the ECW show, and they became like a... It was like where Edge took the place of Raven against Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer. This was the last of those matches, and the escalation was there, but I think that... So I would rank this the third of the three. I still think it's a really, really good match, but I don't think it has the emotional heft to it, and it's nowhere, and it's not as long as those matches with Triple H and with Randy Orton, and it doesn't surprise you in the lengths that they go to, because... Like, obviously, with 2000 Royal Rumble, it was really the introduction of barbed wire. They hadn't really done that on that scale for those, and the thumbtacks as well. And then with Backlash, the pushing it forward was Randy Orton taking the thumbtacks, not Mick Foley. And, like, a traditional wrestler going to that level that they'd never really done before. And with Edge, the step up with this would be the introduction of the flaming table. But that was something that had happened at the ECW One Night Stand, like, the year before. So, even then, and that is the spot that everyone remembers. And again, that is a spot that it's unlikely will happen in WWE again. And so again, that's why this match stuck out for so long and was so well remembered. But now that AEW do matches that have like 3, 4, 5 times the amount of spots with that many more weapons, that I think for you, Simon, that's why it now pales in comparison, because of what you've seen from Jon Moxley, from Hangman Page, from Swerve Strickland, from Kenny Omega, and from Darby Allin, and even Sting. Simon, what do you think of that point? And then after that, Adam, what do you think of my criticisms in relative terms of saying I don't rate this as highly as those other two Mick Foley matches? So Simon first.
I might be completely botched the use of this term, but yeah, my Overton window has shifted significantly. What was, and at the time was like, oh my God, they set a guy on fire in WWE. That's insane. Is now, I mean, it's actually heartwarming how relatively safe it is compared to some of the flaming table accidents we've seen. Cody against Andrade.
Was the pun intended there with heartwarming, Simon?
No, but I'll take it.
And Adam, what do you think of my counter arguments in favour of the Triple H Randy Orton matches?
For me, I suppose I don't have as much of a connection to the Triple H Matt, because I think at the time, just hated Triple H so much.
even 2000 Triple H.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I had, like, just a visceral hatred for him, which, you know, good heel or whatever, but I found it very difficult to watch his matches for years. Appreciate him now. But, yeah, and I guess that was the beginning of the idea of Mick Foley as sort of a gateway to the main event. And like you say, it continued with the Randy Orton one. With the Orton one, like, to me, I always just think of that match just for that one spot of him throwing Orton into the tap. Maybe it's just a personal thing, but I think this one, especially because of what had happened to Edge with cashing in Money in the Bank, like you say, the whole scene of it all, this one to me, because it felt like Triple H was sort of already there, and Randy Orton, they were going to keep going no matter what with this one. Of the three, it feels like this was the one that actually really did cement Edge in the main event and didn't allow him. And I think also, like, stuff like in the run-up where I think it's the Raw before, or it might have been 2 weeks before, where Mick Foley gets Lita in the mandible claw and he won't come in to protect her and save her. It's that thing of, like, to me, it perfectly balances what would be Edge's persona for the rest of kind of his main heel run, where it's kind of, he's a cowardly heel to some extent, but he can also be vindictive and cool and brutal, so that he doesn't come off the way that, like, I'd say for a few years the Miz did, where it was, he's a cowardly heel, but he's so cowardly that it's kind of like limits your ability to believe ever winning.
My criticism just with the Miz was always, I feel like I might be able to beat him in a fight.
Yeah, whereas Edge, you got this sense that, like, oh no, he's sort of a psychopath.
Yeah,
that means that he also just won't put himself in danger if he doesn't have to.
I do agree with you. This year of ascension that Edge has had between winning Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 21, which I think he said at the time he didn't even want to be in the match even if he won it, but him carrying on with that, and, like, he'd done the heel turn because when he made his big comeback, it hadn't really connected with the crowd for whatever reason. It was one of the few times Edge really just seemed to be at, like, odds with what the crowd wanted, and then the heel turn just made it work so much easier, and as you say, he started to form that bitter, little bit along the lines of the Drew McIntyre character that we have now, the bitter person that feels like the crowd turned on him, and so he'll just be the dickhead if you're going to be a dickhead to me. But as you say, over the course from WrestleMania 21 to this one, with the backstage storyline that came to the reality of him hooking up with Lita, and that would never have been the plan because of the whole Kane storyline, that suddenly they felt they had to pair Lita up with Edge on screen because the crowd knows about it. And one of the best elements, as close as WWE came to, like, doing the worked shoots well, although I had issues with it at the time, but I was like, this was when I was a huge Ring of Honor fan, and, like, Matt Hardy shouting out Ring of Honor during one of those angles was just like, oh my god! It was one of the few times I made sure I was watching WWE at that point to catch that clip. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that whole... See, I always wanted there to be, and I still think there hasn't been perfectly, a team up of a man and a woman as a couple on, like, a Natural Born Killers kind of gimmick. This was as close as it came to it, where they're just recklessly, they've just got each other and it's them against the world. And there is that, but as you say, the underlying thing is that Edge really doesn't care about Lita, that he will put Lita in front of a moving object, whereas if he were to do, like, Natural Born Killers, it would be a case that if Lita got hurt, Edge would lose his mind if you were to do it that way. And that's always the way I wanted them to go with a Natural Born Killers gimmick. I think they tried to do that in ECW with Chris Candido and Tammy Lynn Sinch, but they were both so out of it physically at that point that they couldn't make it work. But I've always thought that's a gimmick that needs to happen at some point. And you wouldn't even necessarily have to do it a guy and a girl anymore. I mean, I can't wait. Have you seen the trailer to that new Kirsten Stewart film coming out, Love Lies Bleeding?
Yes.
That looks like they've got a similar vibe to that as well. You know, like True Romance, Natural Born Killers, those sort of characters. Bonnie and Clyde, the classic formula. So maybe you could do it with two women wrestlers or two male wrestlers. Who knows? It's 2024. So that means in wrestling terms, it's about 2003.
2006 would be perfect, but never mind.
2006 would have been perfect. But yeah, I agree with you. And then that was also the moment where it was like Edge proved himself to management, because I remember Matt Hardy came out and did his promo, and it was as big as Matt Hardy's ever been as an act, like the most over out of the two Hardys at this point. And obviously he's had his runs afterwards, such as Broken Matt Hardy, but this was where he was trying to prove that he was the main eventer, and he cut a promo and he kind of shit the bed slightly. I remember he said, "Oh, I wouldn't mind if you died in a car crash before we have our match." And Edge was like, "That's all you've got? I don't want you to die in a car crash, because I want to meet you in the ring and I want to beat you." And he just outworked Matt in that storyline and came out on top with Lita.
Yeah.
You know, they sent Matt packing after winning that ladder match, and they just carried on with this hot streak. They were the ones that won out of that Kane Matt Hardy storyline. It was Edge that came out on top, and him and Lita. I mean, you know, as you were saying, Simon, so that made the interference work more because it fit in with the characters that they had in this match. Were either of you surprised like I was at the relative short length of the match? It didn't feel like a sprint, but I was surprised that we got to where we were in, 14 minutes, I think the match is? Let's not get into the significance of match times or anything, but that did surprise me. I'm guessing Sean and Vince got more than 14 minutes.
It feels like they did. I'm not going to check, because I'll go into the weeds on that one. I think it was a good pace, because it didn't overstay its welcome. It didn't make any spots hokey. The burning table spot, that was one of the things I was looking specifically for on this watch, is how clumsily or non-clumsily is that set up? Because I don't know if you're aware, Adam, but one of my personal burning hatreds, and that pun was intended, is tables matches themselves, because it's just a lot of setup work and a lot of like, oh, nearly all the time. But this flowed, and you've got the element of Mick being hoisted by his own petard, because whilst Edge brought in the lighter fluid and put it on Mick's shirt, Mick's the one who started putting it on the table, and Lita's like, "Yeah, all right then, I'll carry on doing what you're doing."
I'll tell you what's a great time saver in this match, and God, I was like, oh, can we not bring this in for all future weapons brawls? The weapons are under the stairs, not under the ring. So there's no fumbling, no searching. Mick just has his little stash hidden away. He picks some stuff from it. But then Edge is like, fuck it, let's see what he's got. And he sees the thumbtacks and he brings them in, but it's from the same little stash. It's not both guys have gone in, put something under the ring and never bothered to check what the other person had put in under the ring. I was like, oh my God, how have we spent 15 years doing it under the ring when this match showed us the right way to do it 15 years ago?
Yeah, it is mad that we're still doing the let's all dig around under the ring and be surprised where it is thing. Yeah, like you say, this is the perfect template, not doing that. And if someone brought that back now, like if a Moxley brought that back now, you'd just think, yes, finally, we've done away with this nonsense.
I think you're all sleeping on Raven's shopping trolley full of weapons. That's also a good method.
Yeah, Bad Bunny brought that back, didn't he? And Dean Ambrose used that for the Brock Lesnar match. Think like all the stuff Dean Ambrose would have loved to have done. And his version of that match is the one that he has with Brock. And just, I think that's his greatest frustration in his career. I think that match that they had.
He mentioned it on the Stone Cold podcast he did. It was just a lot of rejection. Brock just didn't want to do any of the stuff he pitched.
Can I also say, again, on the point that you were saying your love of this, Adam, and you're both complimenting the storyline. Now, because I wasn't watching Raw on a regular basis, I didn't know all the angles. Like, I had no memory of the whole him putting Lita in the mandible claw before this. And that's a great way of... Was that to, like, make Edge accept the hardcore terms or something? Was there a reason behind his madness?
It was mostly to elevate the idea of, like, Mick Foley had gone through this period where he'd become what Mick Foley seems to be like in real life. Kind of jovial and happy, and, you know, he'd come out and be Santa or whatever. And so I think it was mostly just to push the... And he says in his promo, in a good promo in the run-up, he says, you know, you've awakened the hardcore legend.
There's a moment, I think the week before, Edge just says, you've just turned into a big cuddly teddy bear, you're not what you used to be. And Foley starts the promo that Adam's mentioning by going, yeah, Edge, you're right, I have turned into a big cuddly teddy bear, but you've awoken something inside of me. And it's his metamorphosis back to his Cactus Jack element.
Well, that's interesting because literally he becomes Cactus Jack in the Triple H feud. And that angle, that sounds like it's very much along those lines. I just think that's one of the best angles WWE's ever done. That time where he just, as he said, you know, all I did was take my mask off and reveal a shirt underneath my other shirts. But Triple H sold it like it was he'd seen a ghost, because that did work from Triple H's past as well, because he wrestled the first Cactus Jack match at the same venue and everything 3 years earlier. So to me, that just feels like not a watered down, but just a repeat of that. And because it's not even Cactus Jack, because he's Cactus Jack against Triple H, whilst he's announced as Mick Foley in the Backlash match, he is dressed as Cactus Jack, even with Cactus on his tights and everything. Whereas with this one, it is just Mick Foley, and also it's a larger Mick Foley, it's a slower Mick Foley. He can't quite, when he does the right hand forearms to Edge in the stairs, they're not as fast as they were back in those days. He doesn't move as easily as he does before, and I feel like they have, because that was the thing about Mick Foley, he was deceptively able to keep up with these guys, you know. But even before these three matches, he had the one with Shawn Michaels at Mind Games where he kept up with Shawn, and that was also the story of the virtuous babyface in those instances having to deal with a scary, unusual opponent that he did, again, to name drop Sting, all the way back in 1992 when they had their feud and he took on Cactus Jack in like a Falls Count Anywhere match. That was like, which was Mick Foley's, those were Mick Foley's longest time favorite two matches before he had these three matches as well. But I never felt like this, because it was just a truncated like 6 or 7 or 8 week builder that I don't recall. And they had a history, obviously, from all the comedy sketches from 2000. But to the best of my knowledge, they didn't allude to those. They didn't allude to that history that much. And whilst you were saying, like, this is Edge's elevation, he'd already won the world title. He'd already been proven to be a ratings guy. He was already a main eventer that had been dropped down. Whereas Triple H and he was also proven to be able to go extreme, just not in the blood element of it, but in all the TLC matches and the big matches, like the match he had with Eddie Guerrero. Like, he's done the crazy violence, big bump stuff that Triple H and Randy Orton were more just the pure wrestlers that were above that stuff. I still think it's a very well-wrestled match, and I love Edge's selling, especially at the end when he's just twitching and it's like he's been traumatized in front of our eyes. Perfectly, the blood that he pours then going into one of the eyes as well. Like, that's an unintentional visual that looks so good. But that, again, is just my feeling of this has been done before and better, and it's not as significant, I feel, in the escalation of Edge as it was the escalation of Triple H and Randy Orton. I still think it's an important part of Edge's career. And didn't he wear the jacket that he wore in that match recently as like a callback? So, again, I think it's a great match, but it's like, if those matches I would give, like, ratings-wise, 5 stars, or, like, I would give the Triple H match 5 stars because it's one of my favourite matches ever. I give the Orton match somewhere around 4.5 to 4.75. This one I'd be more around the 4.25 to 4.5-star rating, personally. So, it's great, but to me, it's still coming out of this. And also, because it doesn't get to go down that epic length, it's just a mid-card match. You know, it's just like a roadblock on Edge's eventual story, because he does then get to bounce back up into the main event and go after John Cena for the title again and win it back. But again, he falls victim to Cena wins LOL in the TLC match they have 6 months after this. I don't mean to be critical, but I guess I'm the one that's lowest on it out of the three of us.
Yeah, I do still side more with Adam because, and hopefully we're speaking from the same hymn sheet here, Adam. It's the fact that with the benefit of hindsight, if you look at all the other people Cena got put against in this era and their, to pinch a made up word, bounce back ability, they didn't have it quite like Edge. And what sets them apart is that Edge had this moment with Foley, and Edge got to further develop his character behind being the ultimate opportunist and just like having the money in the bank and just being that threat. He'd done elements of it. He'd obviously had the feud series with Matt Hardy. He'd had the Last Man Standing match just after he wins Money in the Bank with Chris Benoit, which he wins by hitting Benoit with a brick. The platform was set, but then he's just sort of semi-fed to Cena. And it's like, okay, well, your first ever Money in the Bank winner. He won the title with it, but he didn't hold the title for long. Where does Edge go from here? Like, it's all in the air. But he powers through. This match helps him keep his place at the top. He was at the top, but this is how he clings onto it. I don't know if that's where you're at with this, Adam.
Yeah, I think the biggest argument you could make is Dolph Ziggler. If Dolph Ziggler had this match, if there'd been an equivalent to him, like 5 years down the road, he might have managed to have something like an edge, maybe not an edge career, but something closer to it than he got, the kind of hovering around for years and never really. He is the perfect example of someone who, again, won Money in the Bank, won the world title, but was never meaningfully a main eventer. And he definitely is someone who at times, you know, suffered from Cena being around and could never be top babyface, but was never quite believable enough. His viciousness as a heel, he had some of the opportunism of Edge, but never had the Edge.
No pun intended. Or pun intended, yeah. I don't know. Well, again, not to go back against you on that front, and the list could keep going on. Rusev, Wade Barrett, all of the Nexus, essentially. Arguably The Miz, really, after they did the match after WrestleMania 27. Rob Van Dam, arguably. But Edge was always seen as a key part of their plans. I think he was seen as a potential main eventer from the moment he started in the promotion, and they always had this in mind for him eventually. When I started watching again, on a weekly basis, because we finally got Sky in our house in, like, December 97... January 98, that was when they started doing those Edge vignettes in the build-up to him coming out. And whilst he was never pushed as, like, a top star, he was still clearly, like, a figure for the future. And even though he'd lose sometimes and be stuck in mid-cards as part of the Brood, they still had one of the coolest entrances to this day that people love talking about. When Edge and Christian do those TLC matches and everything, they are the perennial tag team champions during that time and win all three of those matches, Triangle Ladder, TLC and TLC 2. And then after that, with the invasion angle, he's the one that comes away with the Intercontinental US titles. When the roster split happens, he's part of the SmackDown 6 and he's been put in there to go over Angle. Then when he goes out for the year-long injury because of what had happened to his neck, and I actually sent him an email during that time, and he replied to me. And the weirdest thing about that was that his email address that he replied back to me, because I did, like, through the website, and his email address back was, like, edgerama666@aol.com. like the most 1995 email address you can have. Possibly.
Oh, I love it.
But it was cool for him to reply, but he didn't have much else going on, so. And then when he came back, that was maybe, like, one of the first examples of, like, the Cena sort of reaction, where he was getting pushed to them as a babyface, but in the year in between, like, out of sight, out of mind. And so then they had to repackage him. But I feel like, you know, again, going into this match, he was also undefeated at WrestleManias. After this one, he was 5-0. And I think he was always bitter that they never had him go against The Undertaker streak versus streak. Instead, in WrestleMania 23, he had to do the Money in the Bank match again and was taken out mid-match. Do you remember that from the Jeff Hardy swanton off the top of the ladder? I think he was always someone that they kind of protected. I think he was just always a guy that Vince liked. They even made a joke about it in the Edge and Christian show that reeks of awesomeness. Don't even remember that. In the first episode, like, Vince sees them both, meets Edge, gives him a hug, and then Christian, he just says, "I don't like you. Don't you read the internet?" Let's not laugh too much at what Vince says. And I think Edge kind of came to the acceptance that if I'm not going to be the top guy, I'm going to be the Roddy Piper to Cena's Hulk Hogan. And he sort of did. I always think it was bullshit that they didn't get to have a one-on-one WrestleMania 25 main event, that they brought the Big Show into it. Don't know if you remember that. Because it was originally booked to be Edge versus Cena. And he did that whole, "I hate you."
Yeah.
And I do think you can make the case that Edge is maybe, if he's not Cena's greatest rival, he's definitely Cena's first great rival from the run on either side of this. Yeah, I never saw this as, like, Edge being a victim of the system. I think he was a victim of the system insofar as the system was rubbish. I think the system always cared about Edge. I don't think he was ever made to look bad at any point, really, in his run. And so I've never seen Edge as part of that, like, the victim of the machine that this match is some sort of vindication against. I've never seen that with him.
The point you're making is the lens that you look through it, because obviously you are bringing in, obviously, Edge's career from the start. I think when me and Adam, forgive me if I get this this wrong, speaking on your behalf, just to make sure I'm on the same page in terms of your point of view. We're looking at it through the Cena wins LOL era and who survives that. Mm. Getting your point of view across there, Adam?
Yeah, sorry if I'm speaking on your behalf. I think Rocker's right in the sense of clearly, absolutely, Edge was someone they always saw something in. But then all through that era, and there were plenty of people before that they had seen as main eventers and given opportunities to and then given up on. I think Edge, yeah, definitely he was someone that they had always seen something in, and it was always kind of, yeah, you're in a tag team, but you're not. He was always going to be the Shawn Michaels, not the Marty Jannetty of Edge and Christian, realistically. That was always, I think, the way that WWE saw him. But I think it's that thing of, to make it that stick and make it last, it needed stuff like this match. And that's what I think everyone else on that list has lacked. And some of that is just not having a Mick Foley.
Yeah.
And some of that is Mick Foley just being it. There's no one else, like, say, partially because after this era the violence is much more toned down.
Yeah.
There's no one else for people to sort of legitimize themselves against.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's also just no one around to be a Mick Foley, because there's no one else who you can, like, show videos of in Japan exploding barbed wire matches if you want.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think the reason this is so memorable for the longest time, until now when it's maybe finally started to seem watered down, at least in your eyes, Simon. I don't know if you also would agree with Simon, and you'd agree with my theory that the reason it feels watered down now is because we're seeing it be pushed so much further. It's not like the TLCs that they all just kind of bleed together after a while. There's a lot of unintended puns in this episode. But you know what I mean? Like, can you remember a spot from WrestleMania 26's Money in the Bank match, and then you told it's WrestleMania 24's? This had then continued on that notion of, like, a death match every couple of years, or every year eventually, that this wouldn't be as well remembered. This is maybe the most violent match, arguably other than, like, the ECW One Night Stand matches, that WWE ever put on. Just because maybe fire just trumps everything. And this is one of only two matches that had WWE's done that I can think of, unless I'm misremembering, that had a flaming table spot. Is there any other ones other than ECW One Night Stand 05 and this? I don't think so.
Yeah, nothing else other than the...
So,
arguably,
yeah,
the worst gimmick match that you can have, the Inferno match.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that, yeah.
Are you going to change your mind, Simon? I mean, weirdly, though, I think you would love a flaming table match.
Because the Inferno matches are rarer, and some of them were good, no, it's still tables for me, sorry.
Also, one of the things that kind of gives it away as well is it was Mick Foley coming out, first of all, with the two layers of check shirts over him, which is obviously to reveal the barbed wire thing. That didn't seem to get the reaction from the crowd that I think it maybe deserved.
He needed more of it. He only had the one piece wrapped around him, I think, visually. And Joey Styles, for the fans at home, works really hard. And Edge, bless Edge, he tried to cut his shoulder a bit more than he did, but it just didn't come across.
It was
lost to the fans in attendance because there wasn't enough to see.
The Joey Styles announcing is the one other thing I wanted to bring up in this match, because around this time, Joey Styles had got hired. He did, like, New Year's Revolution, didn't he? That was his introduction. And then he became the Raw announcer, but I think Vince was losing faith in him almost immediately, and so they bring JR and he takes Joey Styles' place at WrestleMania, and then they do it again a month later on Backlash. But what's interesting in that is reading up on what Joey Styles said about it was that Vince didn't like his style of commentary, because what he did, and if you watch the old ECW, I think I talked about this in the Rob Van Dam Jerry Lynn match, Simon, for Match of the Week, is he pretty much just called wrestling moves was like 80% of his commentary, especially the match commentary. And that he said that JR took him aside and said, he doesn't want you to call moves, he wants you to tell the story. And he sees WrestleMania, this match, as like his ultimate vindication. And I, knowing that and watching it with that in mind, it is right. He barely says any moves and he's just talking about the character dynamics, the story of the match and what it's doing to affect them. But it's very try hard. It feels like somewhere between Mauro Ranallo and Matt Stryker. He's trying to do a good job. He's trying to get Vince's praise with this one. And because of that, I think he's worked himself so up that there's no moment where he stops to breathe. He's just relentlessly talking throughout the match. And I think JR would have called this match better. But I can see why Joey Styles finds this as a vindication, but Joey Styles is one of those things that, like, over time, I was, at the time I thought he was a great commentator, mainly because he commentated just on his own, which I thought was an amazing achievement, and I thought his voice was cool, and I liked Oh My God, but his stuff ages really badly. It's funny, because I remember playing the old Acclaim game that they did for ECW after they lost the WWF license, and they just put ECW wrestlers over the old WWF movements. I don't know if you ever played that game, Adam, on the N64.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
The commentary from Joey Styles is just announcing the move that the wrestler's just done. And it's probably the most realistic version of a wrestler's commentary transporting to a match, to a show that I've ever seen. What did you guys feel about Joey Styles' announcement, losing his WrestleMania virginity, as he puts it?
The funny bit is where Jerry Lawler straight away mucks up and goes, "Oh, look, you're losing your hardcore virginity." And Joey Styles immediately, he corrects him. He's not having any of that. I don't mind Joey Styles in this environment. I think there was a happy middle ground, but I haven't watched as much of his old stuff as yourself, Lorcan, and I don't know about you, Adam, but I don't have as much to see that aged badly. I think he was good here. But again, it's the lens that you've got, the generational gap here. You're seeing his older stuff, and you're like, well, this isn't the truth. This isn't liked at the time. That's where I'm at.
And yourself, Adam?
I think you're right that this is sort of his, and I can see why he feels it, that this is like him doing the best he possibly could at working the WWE style of commentary. And even then, it doesn't quite feel right. I think you wrote, Simon, there's an element of, if you've heard his other stuff, it doesn't feel like how he normally talks. But I think it, and I guess ultimately that, there's this weird thing, isn't there, during this period, even from the late 90s, that Vince clearly wanted to get rid of JR, like at various points, for whatever reason, wanted to get rid of him from commentary and wanted to find another voice. And eventually, obviously, that became Michael Cole. Joey Styles, like, had a shot at it, but he was never realistically going to be... Like you say, I'd imagine from a personal, like, from his point of view, it, going from calling an entire pay-per-view on his own and sort of having to be mostly pay-by-pay but a bit of colour... must have been just a really difficult adjustment, to be honest. And part of you, like, thinks, God, in some ways, obviously the paycheck would have been, would have actually come and not banked. But it's, and that must have been the tempting part of it. But some of you sort of think, Joey, why did you do it to yourself? Because you were never going to fit in there.
But then he knocked out JBL.
Yes. Yes, the best thing he did in his time in WWE.
I mean, knowing what Joey Styles is like as time went on, he was really upset that Obama became president. My sympathy and time for him has waned greatly over the years.
Rapidly depleted.
Yeah, and I think he's just so out. I don't know if he does the convention circuit. That's like a real, like, specifically WWE 2006 thing, seeing Joey Styles in commentary, or hearing Joey Styles in commentary. And it's not something I feel a particularly warm glow, and watching this back, it was not something that... It's funny, though, that... Because this was the flaming table spot was one of the things that John Oliver showed when he did the Last Week Tonight about how much he loved wrestling. It was at the end of one of those spots that he just said, "Wrestling is better than everything you like." Such a great line. And he does have a go at Joey Styles because, like, the table goes on fire and he says, "What's going to happen?" And he comes to John Oliver and says, "What do you think is going to happen?" Also, I mean, I know you have a go at Cody Rhodes for the whole what he had on his back to set up the floating table, but my God, that is a wet Mick Foley that we see coming out of this ring.
Yeah.
And is wettened up even more as time goes on, because I'm guessing that wasn't actually lighter fluid that Edge was doing. He was just giving him an extra layer of coating for when it happened. Flaming table spots, I never need to see any of them again. I'm sure we will, but I don't need to see them. I never loved them in the first place.
It's risk versus reward, and we've just sort of gone through that in Sting's retirement match with the Darby Allin glass spot.
Now,
we're going to see a lot more risk, and we're not always going to see reward. And then wrestling as a community will have to have that conversation again about how these spots are used and run through. But so far, in terms of the mainstream companies, things generally seem quite safe. Sammy Guevara aside, but that's just a side swipe I'm taking there.
Is this the last Great Mick Foley match? Because I didn't see any of his TNA run, really. I'm guessing at least one of you guys might have watched some of that. Is there any Great Mick Foley match I'm forgetting in between? As I said, I feel like he's barely got it left in him to move anymore. I mean, this is 6 years to his first retirement and another 2 years after the Randy Orton matches. And as I say, he's heavier. He's not moving as fast as he did before. He does all the spots that he always can do, those trusty smacking his legs against the ring step spots and everything. But yeah, I can't think of another great match that he had. But he did get his memorable WrestleMania moment. And again, I think it's kind of not the luck of fate, but the way that the WWE has positioned its on-screen product soon after this is one of the reasons why it's as remembered as it is, I think, more so than the match itself, personally. But again, obviously you guys disagree with me on that, and that's absolutely fine. Does anyone have any other extra points about the match you wanted to get on before we talk a little bit more about the event and then ask Adam for some dream booking on his side?
No, just that I like the, and I think they tried to do it on purpose, definitely did it on purpose, both of them getting the barbed wire like raked over them in sort of the same way that there was that iconic shot from the Backlash match. I think they made sure both of them got the big visual of having it happen to them. And the fact that Edge does it to Foley just makes his character look a bit more sadistic. I thought that was quite clever.
I think it's true that this kind of feels end of an era. And with Mick Foley, no, like I watched most of the TNA run and there was never, and you kind of thought maybe he would have one last great match with Abyss because, you know, that seemed to make logical sense that like Abyss was essentially sort of the potential kind of replacement. And in some ways, maybe there's a timeline in which he came to WWE but again, the era had changed and that lack of the wiggle room to do more violent stuff.
I feel like
he would have never worked there.
Yeah, I feel like it was Abyss that really diluted the thumbtack spot. That was just basically every match he had. I mean, Sting took it. We knew it. We should have known all along that he was a madman. He was taking those thumbtack spots back in 2009 or whenever it would have been in the Abyss matches. But yeah, I think the problem with Abyss I always thought he was a very good worker and I liked the gimmick, but it did just feel like someone's done Kane and Mankind and they've gone through the fly splice machine and have come out the other end, and that's what Abyss was.
Yeah, except for the incredible period where he was Hulk Hogan's protege.
And Joseph Park, don't forget Joseph Park.
Oh, we've covered Joseph Park.
Yeah.
We did. I think that's a lost episode, though, Simon. I can't remember if it ever went out, but we did. The Joseph Park match against Bully Ray is one of the most fascinating matches ever, where a guy who can wrestle has to play someone who can't wrestle. I really love how he did that. We'll save that. Maybe we'll do, if that is lost, then maybe we'll bring you in for that. We can talk about that match for a match of the week, Adam. How does that sound?
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, WrestleMania 22. Let's talk a little bit more about the event itself. The last WrestleMania to be held in an arena. Every WrestleMania after that has been a stadium show, and I think that was like an edict Vince made afterwards. And I think the reason I see that is like they were so desperately trying to make this arena look like a stadium, like the swirling spotlights, like 20th Century Fox logo, the draped superstars all over the place on the rafters. I think that's the only time they ever did that. I might be wrong. They tried to make the stage look like a big stadium stage, right down to when they moved it about for the big Triple H John Cena entrances, Triple H's Conan the Barbarian audition, and John Cena's I've got a Tommy gun, so I'm a gangster.
Yeah,
I guess because it was in Chicago, wasn't it? So it was meant to be that. And obviously one CM Punk as a a lackey in the entrance.
Ah, dear me.
A few months before his ECW debut. But Simon, do you want to just run down the matches and some of your own matches or moments that you remember vividly from this show?
This is one of the ones that sits in my memory a little bit, mainly because of the Ray stuff, which we'll get to. So, pre-show, Viscera wins a 18-man interpromotional battle royal. The main card opens with Big Show and Kane defending the World Tag Team Championships against Carlito and Chris Masters. Very loud Carlito chants for that one. RVD wins this year's Money in the Bank. The other participants, Bobby Lashley, Finlay, Matt Hardy, Ric Flair, and Shelton Benjamin.
That was at that moment that, like, any wrestler can be pulled out for a ladder match now. No one's safe.
I think Flair does the Terry Funk spot where he gets stretched out and comes back as well.
Oh, okay.
You've got JBL team Chris Benoit for the United States Championship. This match that we're talking about then follows. And then after this match, you've got the Boogeyman defeating King Booker and Queen Charmel by pinfall in a intergender handicap match. That was a whole thing. You've got Mickey James defeating Trish.
Yeah, if we were to talk about any other match from this card, I think that would have been the one I would have been happy to talk about the most.
Straight afterwards, Undertaker defeating Mark Henry in one of his weakest WrestleMania matches, in my personal opinion. You've got then afterwards, Shawn Michaels defeating Vince McMahon. Goes 4 minutes longer than the match we've discussed today, just to satisfy you time nerds out there, with Shawn beating Vince. Rey Mysterio wins the World Heavyweight Championship afterwards in a triple threat match between Kurt Angle and Randy Orton. After losing the shot, then just randomly being given it back by Teddy Long out of sympathy. They really handicapped the Rey run so badly. It was such a mess.
Yeah. Edge has got a leg to stand on to moan about how he was booked in comparison.
Oh, no, absolutely not. No. You've got a Playboy pillow fight match where Tori Wilson defeats Candice Michelle. And the main event, John Cena cost me £10 by getting Triple H to tap out.
Because as you said, going into it, I think everyone assumed Triple H was going to win. And I remember Power Slam, they were like constantly having a go at John Cena for his inability to wrestle. But then also being furious that Triple H was being booked to look so much better than John Cena. But I think that the story was meant to be that John Cena, whilst he's won the title, this is the final proving ground for him, is to beat Triple H at WrestleMania. It's like Okada having to beat Tanahashi at Wrestle Kingdom or something. And he did. He got like a submission win out of him as well, as you say. The STF. After the Rock Sharpshooter, maybe the second most frustrating submission hold in all of wrestling. But do you have any specific memories or things about any matches in particular you want to talk about or about the show itself? I will say my last big bugbear, I think I'll say before I let you guys go. I think this is the worst WrestleMania poster they've ever produced. It's just John Cena doing a bulldog to Booker T.
From No Mercy the year before.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. And also the nickname Big Time and the song time was Peter Gabriel. I mean, again, in the next episode, we're going to talk about musical tie-ins at this time in WrestleManias. I mean, this was at the time when I feel like WWE was at its most culturally insignificant. Like, unless you were into wrestling, it had no cultural penetration at all. That's my feeling about this event and this. This is the last time WrestleMania, I think, has felt in some way insignificant. But what are your guys' feelings about this show or other matches on this card?
Obviously, the Trish Mickie James match is one that always stands out. Probably one of the best female feuds the pre-last sort of years or so of booking. And Mickie James just sort of underrated, I guess. Yeah, the STF. Someone who does enjoy this one, my love of hardcore, I grew up on a lot of Bret Hart as well, so I love a bit of technical wrestling, and the STF has got to be one of the worst, particularly Cena's version of it has got to be one of the worst submission holds in the history of wrestling. The poster, I mean, if you're going to get a Peter Gabriel song, surely you get one of your stars to stand with the boombox over their head.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Or try and recreate the Sledgehammer video with WWE wrestlers in it.
See, you guys have done that in like 2 minutes. And their creative department just didn't.
But what do you think about my point that this feels like... It doesn't even feel like it's part of an era either. Like it's either the tail end of Ruthless Aggression or it just... We were saying WrestleMania 17 is really like the last day of the Attitude Era. And Ruthless Aggression really starts from the Vince McMahon Raw episode where he says it for the first time. And that period between it, you know, the invasion and the NWO and everything, is like a little netherworld in and of itself. It's like 1975 music before punk happens or something. Like, something's going to happen, but we don't know what yet. Mm. And this feels like it as well. But obviously what we're about to come into is the PG era. But it feels like the Ruthless Aggression era is from there until WrestleMania 21, where John Cena and Batista win the titles, and like that class of 02 comes good, I suppose. Because also Orton has the match on with The Undertaker on the undercard. Lesnar's gone already by then. But the other three that they built up have got there. And yeah, it just, it's all part of the furniture, really. Just WWE is WWE. It's not capturing any zeitgeist at this time.
I think,
and also because it's not in a stadium, it can't give the delusion of being important either.
For me, it holds a bit of a special place in my heart, I guess, because of when I watched it. So I was 15 at the time. I didn't have a lot of access to other wrestling, so I did watch this tape a fair few times. I like the silliness of the Shawn Michaels Vince McMahon match, and I did like something about Vince hardcore matches where he does commit.
I remember being angry at the time because, like, already I think Shawn had said, "I'm Mr. WrestleMania" by this time. And it's like, if your guy is notorious for having the best match at every WrestleMania or whatever, you don't put him against Vince McMahon. That's for your Shanes. That's for your Hulk Hogan's at WrestleMania 19. It's not for, in theory, your best worker still on the whole roster.
The other thing, obviously, with Ray, I think he was one of the reasons, this actually got me into the band Shinedown, the I Dare You at the start. That's sort of how I ended up becoming such a Shinedown fan that I am now.
Yeah.
I think with the Ray stuff, I liked it at the time. I look back with a level of cynicism, which was also being fed into me by Power Slam, who were just like, well, why? No one ever said he was going to get another chance if he lost to Randy Orton. The same point I've already made, they handicapped Ray from the start. It was very much your mate died, attention's on you, let's give you the title.
Adam, any further thoughts of WrestleMania 22? I was just going to say, this is also like in between the Eddie death and the Benoit death. So they've obviously started to implement a wellness policy. And I did notice Edge looked a bit smaller than his just returned in 2004. You know, those sort of vitamins that now AJ Styles and Randy Orton seem to be on when they make their big comebacks. But then before the Benoit tragedy and everything, and then that was like, well, we've got to enforce a wellness policy now. We can say it with the Eddie one, but we've got to do it now. But not to bring grimness into your final reflections of the event. But do you have anything more you wanted to say about it? Do you have nostalgic memories for this like Simon does?
I think I'm more with you. I think we always try and sort of neatly define eras, and I think you're right, this was a holding pattern where it's like it's a puzzle where all of the pieces are sort of there, but it's just about to click into place for the PG era, but it's not. We've still got sort of the match we've talked about is like a vestige of a past, a bit of a bridge between the eras. Like you say, it does feel like it's a lull in the connection between product and mainstream culture, a lull in kind of, you've already got sort of Cena darting to great with some fans already, but it's like, no one had any idea that there's going to be another 10 years of this.
It's like they've got a product where they will still go as far as they would with an Austin Attitude Era style of wrestling or in-ring presentation, yet they have a Hulk Hogan-esque cartoon superhero as the main guy. So it feels like, you're right, the tone is moving more towards what fits John Cena. Or at least John Cena can work within those parameters well. But as I've always said, I think I just moved on from WWF. I was like, WWF's not giving me what I want. That's fine. That's what they want to do. I will find what I want elsewhere. And I found it with Ring of Honor. And I've never had a lot of sympathy for those people that in the main event of this show start booing John Cena when he comes out. It's like, if you don't enjoy it, don't spend hundreds of dollars to this show and get angry. Go to a little show in Liverpool, if you're me, instead of flying all the way to America and trying to sabotage it. But, oh boy, we've got many more years of this yet to come.
Oh, yes.
Thank you so much for coming on with us, Adam. But one last question we have for you. If you could book a dream WrestleMania match that could have happened in an ideal world, no time travel, but, and doesn't have to be for this event, but if it is, that'd be a funny little coincidence. Have you been dwelling on this question, and do you have an answer for us right now?
My joke answer was going to be for this year's WrestleMania, Vince makes a stunning comeback and is in a handicap match against everyone he's ever wronged.
There's only 2 days, Adam.
We sort of got that a version of that with the Brett match at 26, but yeah, an actual one.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Sort of that.
A remake.
But more people. More people involved. Just a real cathartic moment. But I think my serious answer, because it would be much like when he eventually did return, it would be more of an angle than a match realistically. But I think WrestleMania 28 Punk versus Austin match would have been the dream perfect, because we got Punk versus Jericho, and we had the kind of run up of Jericho pouring Jack Daniels on him and stuff. So it felt like that was the build, some of the build that you would have got to a Punk Austin. And I just think it could have entirely changed the timeline of wrestling.
Yeah.
You might never have left.
Yeah.
Who knows what could have sprung forth from then. And then I guess the question then is what happens with Jericho? And it's like, well, you could have put Jericho and Bryan in a feud, maybe. Again, because like the catalyst for the Jericho Punk match was Jericho costing Punk against Bryan, but if it had been the opposite way around, I guess that's how you get to the Jericho versus Danielson. But
but yeah, we don't have to go into the butterfly effect of all this. You don't need to then rebook Big E and Dolph Ziggler against Kane and Bryan at that show. We don't need to go that far.
I think
you're right, because like
would have made so much sense.
Yeah, and we've got to assume, I don't feel like between 28 and, 38, when Austin wrestled Kevin Owens, I don't feel like he would have healed much more from those 10 years that the 9 years between 19 and 28 meant he couldn't have gone to some degree or another.
Yeah, I think it was more a stubbornness than a... Yeah,
WrestleMania 28 was the Daniel Bryan Sheamus moment.
Ah, okay, wow. There we go. We don't need to worry about what you think.
Prevented the yes movement from happening by
yeah. My God, man, what have you done? What have you done?
The unforeseen consequences.
But thank you very much for being part of this episode, Adam. If people want to follow you on the socials, if people are around the West Midlands area and want to check out your comedy nights, how can they do so?
Yeah, you can follow me on pretty much all social media at Ad Hawkeye, and you can follow the Kamikaze Club on all social media at the Kamikaze Club.
All right, well, thank you very much for joining us, Adam. Simon, if people want to get in touch with you with any more suggestions for how you can have fun with tables, how can they do so?
People can get in touch with me on Twitter, where I'm sending the Simon Cross free for the number of people in this match who squirted lighter fluid.
My name's Lorcan Mullen, that's LORCANMULLA for the A in abdomen, N for the N in the nick on Edge's arm that he got after he speared Mick Foley in his abdomen. That's my Twitter handle, Instagram, Facebook, letterbox. If you put in at gmail.com at the end of it, that's my email address. Get in touch with the show at lmtyspod@gmail.com. lmtyspod is also our Twitter and Facebook handles. For the next episode, boy are we going for a change of pace. Simon, what WrestleMania event are we going to be at, and what match are we going to be watching?
Well, we're going to WrestleMania 25, where we are looking at the 25 Diva Battle Royal to become the first ever Miss WrestleMania.
And we will be accompanied in that episode by the comedian and member of Wrestle Club, Danny Scott. But until then, there's nothing to say at this point except that my name's Lorcan Mullen.
My name's Simon Cross.
Thank you for letting us tell you something, and we hope that you will continue with us as we've now gone past the halfway stage of March Mania. I'm gonna watch you grow.